Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Coming up a little bit later, we've got a new person in the fray for our inbox. Caitlin Hetzel will be here from our counseling department to talk about long-distance friendships and how to maintain those in a way that is good and healthy. And then for our culture segment, also a new author, Darlene Brock, is going to be talking about her book, Moms Raising Daughters. And I really liked her perspective on how to really be a mom who has a good influence on your young adult daughters, and what are kind of some of the expected and unexpected things that may come up as a result of that. But here we are for our culture segment, and I've got a great group of people with me. One by phone, Brock is on the phone. Hey, Brock.
Hey, how's it going? I'm not Darlene Brock. I'm Brock Eastman. So I just want to clarify that.
Right. You're not. But that's why we had you on the roundtable, because we wanted to have some continuity with that. So
perfect. Love it.
That's really, I mean, I don't even know what you're going to say, but really it doesn't even matter because your name is Brock. So that's good. Also, we have got Megan here. Megan, welcome.
Hello.
Megan in the fray, and James. James, welcome.
Hey.
We have got two. Now, Brock's been on the show before, but both Megan and James are newcomers, mm-hmm. So that's good.
Be nice.
And we are going to talk about moms. It is Mother's Day. Have you all done something for your moms already? Because quite frankly, if you haven't by now, it's too late.
Yeah, I got one of those recordable books from Hallmark. And so my little 2.5-year-old is going to sing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star and read the story.
Aww. Nice.
So I'll read the story, but she'll give input.
Nice.
My mom is going to ball.
That... Not that you're bragging about it or anything. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like that was your goal, Brock.
That's very.
But for my wife, we've already got her taken care of too. We did that Yobel Market thing that Zach Hunter's part of, and
I
got really cool stuff for her. I let Kimley pick it all out, so mm-hmm. Pretty excited about it.
That is very good. I did something similar, Brock. I actually got my mom, because I'm kind of like, what am I going to get my mom? And she's in Minnesota, so I can't really do something super tangible or perishable. So I got her a, through Partners International, training for a Nepalese itinerant pastor or something like that. And it's like you give to them and then it's given for Mother's Day in your mom's name or whatever. So my mom's very passionate about preaching and teaching and training up, you know, folks in their own countries to lead their own churches. And so she'll be excited about that. She'll probably ask why I didn't also send her chocolate, but maybe I'll just have to throw that in somewhere else. She wants both.
You guys are super creative. That's awesome. We just always get my mom hoops and yo-yo cards that sing to her.
Oh, yeah.
Random, funny things. Those are her favorite. My girls, 16 and 7 years old, have gotten her cards. She has a drawer full. So I got her a hoops and yo-yo Mother's Day card.
That's
sticking with tradition.
Yep.
Nice. I actually live at home right now, so at least for a couple more weeks. And so I get to actually spend Mother's Day with my mom, which is cool. And
cool.
I'm pretty sure she's listening, so I can't say what I'm going to do and ruin the surprise.
Well, you better at least be getting her a card, because she's going to say, your presence is not enough, James. So don't think you're going to cop out with that.
That's good.
Well, we want to talk about, and this is kind of something, you know, Mother's Day comes every year. So on the Boundless Show, we're now 4 years in. So it's like, what can we say new about mothers, folks? So we are going to trend in the direction of talking about our experiences with our mothers growing up, specifically their presence in our home and their influence in our home. And were they at home? Were they stay-at-home moms full time? Did they work? And how did that shape not only who we are today, but then our opinion on motherhood and kind of mothers in the home or in the workforce? So this could be super cheerful, or it could get super controversial. We don't know what's going to happen here. So that's how we roll on the Boundless Show. So let's just start talking a little bit about really what, I mean, when you think of that, when I introduced that, what comes to mind as far as that experience of your mom in your home? It's not something we think about all the time, but it's something that greatly has influenced us.
I would say that when the question was posed to me, as now a full-time working mom that I am, I had to step back and think really about the experience. My mom worked full-time when I was growing up, and I remember thinking, and we were very well-to-do, and I remember thinking she didn't have to, and I wish she wouldn't, because I wish she would spend more time with me. And so to know that as a child, not just think back on that as an adult, but to know that as a child, I mean, it was really a very honest reflection that came to mind when I was asked the question. I recognize not all moms have that option, whether to work or not to work, and that there's the whole question of sacrifice and also balancing. But from my own experience with what my mom did, I wished she hadn't worked, especially when I was younger. However, I have to say, looking at her as a role model, I know she's a very strong woman. She's achieved a lot. She's set goals. And I have to say that's impacted me very well. So it's a give and take, I think, for me.
So what, just busting in here, what was her motivation to work? Was she in a career that she just loved, or what was?
Not really, I don't think. I think for more than anything, just because of the home I grew up in, it was somewhat of an escape. My home was pretty dysfunctional. My dad's an alcoholic, so just bearing, you know, all the wounds right here on the Boundless Show. But that's the effect Lisa has on people.
I'm synonymous with wounds. I mean, let's be honest.
I'm being honest. If I look back and I think, you know, maybe what was in the motivation for her, she has always been a hard worker, but I think part of that maybe was an escape in a sense too, to separate herself and have something that maybe was healthy or functional, or just gave her a sense of fulfillment.
Yeah.
Silence.
Okay, well, my background is my mom worked full-time. She went to school, and she was a respiratory therapist before I showed up. And then once I was there, she stayed home all the time. And I remember being really confused when I first heard about my friend's moms who worked, because I thought, well, why on earth would they do that? Because to me, I mean, I came home every day to my mom, and she was there to help with homework and keep me out of mischief. And so, growing up, home was not so much my house, it was wherever my mom was. And so I think there's a lot of benefits to having grown up in that context, for me at least.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably a sense of just security and a sense of consistency and normalcy in that sense. That's good. Brock, what about you?
Yeah, my parents tried a couple different things. My mom, when we were really little, worked for a lawyer, and so we were in a daycare for a couple years. But then she decided to come home and have a daycare in our house. And so I grew up that with, it was kind of working mom, more kids, but at home with my mom too, which was nice. And then when my sister and I went to grade school, she actually got a job as a secretary at the grade school. So even though she was working, her hours were the same as ours, and so we'd still have her at home with us, and even, you know, during lunch we'd go see her. So I have some fond memories of being at the grade school, actually, you know, an hour or two after school got out, just playing in the gym and knowing she was there. And then she had kidney failure, so when I was in middle school, she actually stopped working and she was home, but it was just hard because, you know, just going through a lot of medical things. So it wasn't that she was working, but she was just not feeling well for several years while we were in middle school.
Yeah.
And then so that was hard in a different way. And then when we went to high school, she went back to work again at a flower shop, but always her timing was always good because whenever we'd come home or have sports, my sister and I were involved in a lot of sports, she was always at the events with my dad. My dad was on one side of the state with me, and my mom was on the other side of the state with Tiffany, my sister. So I think my parents were really intentional about being there for Tiffany and I when we weren't in school or when we were home. But yeah, they tried to kind of balance that workload and being home for us. Probably a little more chaotic than it needed to be at times, but I think they really worked hard to make it feel like Tiffany and I had the attention we needed from them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. I kind of grew up, most people know, as almost an only child because I'm the youngest of six and all my siblings are a lot older than I am. And but my dad was a pastor and then worked kind of some odd jobs. So my mom did really work as well from the time I was very small. And then she took a couple breaks. And then when I was in early grade school, she worked as a yard duty and in the cafeteria at my school. So her hours were the same as mine. But by the time I hit fifth grade, I was a latchkey kid. And so she went to work full time and I came home, and this was in California, you know, so I was on like sketchy bus systems and walking with my friends. And I just wonder, you know, to myself, like, do kids do that today? Because that was kind of dangerous. I mean, I think we walked like over like probably close to 2 miles each way. So
up snow, up and down hills.
Only in California, you know it, of course. So that's how we did it.
I'm just hearing my grandpa's words there.
Exactly. Yeah, but I mean, at that point, it was like, so I remember coming home from school and watching TV and just being like, you know, eating a bowl of Fruit Loops and kind of doing all that kind of stereotypical stuff that the latchkey kids do. But it's funny because as I think about it, I never thought of my mom as a working mom until I was in like high school. That's when I remembered and realized, oh yeah, she's really working. The rest of the time it was just kind of like, oh yeah, here I am home from school and doing whatever. So let me ask, as you guys think of this and reflect on it, there are probably impressions that others had of your home life and kind of what was ideal or what wasn't ideal. What would you say, what were really some of the pros and cons, whether that you recognized in the moment or that you look back on now and say, yeah, that's something I would do differently?
I was just going to say, I don't know if this answers your question. I feel like when I think about the choices that my mom made as an adult now, I can really reflect on that. And I don't fault her for the choices that she made. It actually helps me remember that she's just a human being. She made decisions that helped her deal with her life circumstances at the time. And what's funny about something that you said, Lisa, is that you didn't see your mom as a working mom necessarily. Well, my parents divorced later when I was 15, and I actually never saw my mom really as a single mom. She never dated. I'm not saying that because she immediately had a relationship. She hasn't. I always saw her just as such a strong, independent woman. So I guess I think that even though there was the heartache and the sadness over some of the time that I didn't have with her, maybe I wanted that attention. Growing up, I definitely saw her strength. And I think that her hardworking nature and the fact that she set her goals and achieved success. She's really self-made in her decorating business and all of that kind of thing. She really used her skills and gifts and talents. That's inspiring to me. So I look back and I think maybe it wasn't perfect, but what is? And it helps me see her as just a human being. And that's part, I mean, I think that's valuable.
Yeah, it's hard for me to think of any kind of cons of having my mom home all the time. I think, if anything, I had a bit of a kind of a narrow-mindedness to it because of that. So that when I interact with my friends about working moms, I always kind of had, in the back of my mind, a kind of small little bit of judgment that their moms weren't there the same way my mom was there. And then it was just an immaturity on my part, because as I got older, I started realizing, well, life's a lot more complicated than that, and everyone has different situations. They have to make the best decision for their situation. And I remember especially my dad kind of put it to me. He said his mother, my grandmother, had raised 6 boys in Alaska while working. And so there's a lot of respect to be had for the working mom, definitely.
Yeah. Did you notice, now, James, did you have to give up? I mean, were there sacrifices that your family made because your mom stayed home, or were those not noticeable to you either?
No, my dad was an officer in the Air Force, so financially we're always pretty okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe your mom made up a little bit for what your dad couldn't do or couldn't be there. I mean, or was he pretty hands-on too?
There were seasons when he wasn't there so often.
I just think that's important because the whole idea of a partnership really matters to my husband and I. And so as we're raising our girls and having been foster parents and adoptive now parents, we look back and we think of the sacrifices we made, but it was always so one of us could be more hands-on, and there's that partnership element. Well, I recognize my mom didn't have that option. She didn't really have that option when she was married, and she certainly didn't have that option when she was single. Mm-hmm. So...
Yeah, I'd say that's, you know, in our situation at home, I think we, you know, there are a lot of families and friends who they go on a lot more vacations than we would, and part of that was because financially they had more money. Their moms worked, their dads worked probably longer hours than my dad did. And so I think on that side, you know, I as a kid, I'm like, oh, that's not fair. I've only gone to Florida once, or, you know, my friends are going to Florida every spring break, and not quite understanding why our vacations were driving 3 hours to Nebraska for camping, or 7 hours to Nebraska for camping for Illinois in the humid summer, and theirs are going to Florida on the beach. But, you know, it's just kind of that balance of now, as Ashley and I have our daughters, just looking at what we value. And, you know, I work at Focus, and she's home with the kids. She's got a degree in early education, but we've kind of made that choice for her to be home and just be with our girls, and it's a sacrifice on both parts. She really likes education, and she'd love to go get her master's, but for the time being, you know, we think it's the most valuable thing for her to be raising her daughters and just bringing them up and teaching them, and we're going to do homeschool preschool. And so I think looking at where I was at with my parents and looking at how we're trying to do our life, we're making sacrifices, and, you know, financially too, because we have college debt to pay off, but we're not aggressively going after it with two incomes. But I think we see a value in just being there for our kids and trying to raise them up.
You know, we our generation kind of has had to make that transition, you know, those of us that grew up in the 80s and 90s from the Brady Bunch kind of construct, you know, where Florence Henderson was always home and just kind of some of the more traditional roles. And then we went into the 80s and we saw Claire Huxtable and she was still working. But at the same time, you know, they still managed to have a great home. Of course, it is fictional, folks, but, you know, whatever. And and some of the other more non-traditional, you know, single parent, you think of the sitcoms, you know, that came up out of that. And then, of course, into the 90s with similar examples. And I think it is, you know, it subtly kind of influences how we have impression. I think our generation is much more forgiving of people being in different situations. And of course, when you look at like single moms now and just what has to, you know, I think people tend to get fired up, you know, and Brock, you alluded to your own situation of daycare and stuff. And I know people get really fired up when we talk about daycare and just how, I mean, you guys, you know, a couple of you having families now and James and I not, but what does that look like? I mean, the ideal situation today of parenting in the culture as you know it and moms, what are the best contributions that moms can make in their home life? And what are some of the things really that you think moms have to keep in mind?
Yeah, it's actually interesting you say that because, you know, you look at daycare and actually my wife worked in a daycare when she was in college. That's how she kind of supported herself, went to college and so forth. But it is expensive. I mean, you'd have to literally work. She'd have to go work full time for us to afford daycare. And, you know, God's been good to us. He's blessed actually with that. Well, first of all, you know, going and getting a degree in early education, but also just with the gift of children. And so that said, you know, he just kind of set us up for this situation that we could, in fact, have our girls in the home and do that. And we took on a friend's daughter, actually, as her mom goes to school and works, to have her come into our home a few days a week and actually watches her. But I do think that as you balance, or each family situation is different. Some moms, you know, they working is important to them. That's what they've gone to school for, and that's what they are, you know, they want to aspire to do. And I think that's fantastic. And for us, I think Ashley, she'll very well go to work later. That just might be once the girls enter school. You know, it just kind of depends on what situations and opportunities God puts in our lives at any given time. So. Mm-hmm. Right now, I can afford to take care of our family, and if that were to change, then it might be the opposite. Maybe I'd be home with the girls while she goes and works.
That's a good point, Brock, because I think that you look at your situation is what's right for you, and it's what's comfortable for your family. Comfortable in a good way. Comfortable in a way that you're able. I know it's not easy. I know being home with little ones is not easy. Always for mom, but it's fulfilling or satisfying. So you've identified what your comfort level is as the parents and what you are committed to. I think that's what parents have to do in general. I think that when you can't say one size fits all. Mm-hmm. It's not. And every time I've said, oh no, that won't work for me, God has challenged me. I mean, I thought I would never homeschool. I homeschooled. I thought that I thought that our youngest wouldn't go to public school. She's in public school. I mean, I feel like God will put in front of you opportunities to trust him more and at a deeper level, and your faith will grow. And sometimes that's by making a sacrifice, and then you're very assured of what, you know, the choice that you've made. Sometimes it's going out on a limb. Right now, my husband and I have had to really work out a partnership where I'm working full time and he's trying to find a job that will allow him to be more hands-on. But what I would say to parents and moms especially is don't do what your best friend is doing just because that's what you see. Don't do what the television show shows you because that's what you see. You really need to search your heart and find out what is truly your calling, because that's going to be what's best for you and your children.
Mm-hmm. I would say, too, that I really appreciate in my own mom. You know, my mom's a very strong personality. She and I are very similar in kind of all of our giftings are the ones that trend towards more maleness, you know, administrative gifts, prophecy, stuff like that. And so my mom had to really find herself in that. Mm-hmm. But what I really appreciate about my mom is that she always recognized a biblical femininity in the midst of that. And she recognized what her role was, that she could go and do something in the workplace and she could be involved in church in a certain role. but she would always prioritize her family. And mm-hmm. she always made whatever concession she needed to make in order to live that out and to allow my dad to, you know, serve in the ways that he was called to serve as well, and not be the person that was like, well, I'm better at this than you are or whatever, so I'm just going to go out and bulldoze you down and you figure out your own way and stuff like that. So she and my dad really did a good job of that, and I appreciate that. So I still felt like she was fulfilling a very motherly role in our home, mm-hmm. even though she had a strong personality and a lot of strong traits in that. So, well, you guys, we're going to wrap this up. Unbelievably, our time is up. So thank you very much for weighing in on this. And I just want to give a shout out to all the moms out there, single moms or other moms who are listening, as well as a reminder to all y'all to make sure to thank your mom, not only this week, but throughout the year, because they have a huge influence on us. And hopefully they have played a role in moving us towards maturity and certainly towards marriage and family ourselves. So thank you all so much for weighing in on this.
Thank you.
Thanks. Cool. Thank you. Up on the heights, oh, oh, you let me go, oh, oh, you make my heart to rise from the depths below, and you hold me up, oh, oh, so I can see, oh, oh, you're ever lifting me, you're ever lifting me. You lift in my head so I know you need me, you lift in my eyes so I see you clearly.
Well, hey everyone, I am very privileged for this week's culture segment to be in the studio with Darlene Brock. Darlene, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Very good to have you. Darlene is the author of, and of course you'll find this appropriate because this is our Mother's Day podcast. She is the author of Help Wanted, Moms Raising Daughters. But you have a pretty varied background, being with Forefront Records. Good. You know, you were what, operations, chief of operations for them?
Yeah. My husband, Dan, was one of the founding partners, was there the duration. And I kind of ran the business side of the whole company from the beginning till we sold it.
Well, that's good because it kind of gave you the cool mom moniker, I'm sure. You know, it's kind of, you kind of were in the know, I'm sure. So
it helped. It helped a little bit. I at least understood music and what was current for my girls. So it also made me pretty astute on what they were listening to. Yeah,
definitely knowing the industry, that's good. But I know you do say in your writing that the role of mom has been your most rewarding one, and one that you love and one that you continue in, having two adult daughters now, right?
I do. I have two girls that are 25 and 29 now.
Okay.
Yeah. One's married, a school teacher, married to a seminary student in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. My eldest daughter is in Los Angeles, California, in film production.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. Wow. Yeah. Two coasts, though. That's a little tricky.
It is a little tricky. Yeah. Yeah, we have to rendezvous occasionally.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's great. And you're going to have a lot to say to us today. And I want to, I know that what you talk about in the book is unique, and that you really address the number of roles that moms have to take on, probably some of them unsuspectingly. I think there are some moms that just kind of sign up for motherhood and they don't really know what they're in for, especially as they have to look ahead to the number of stages they have to help their daughters walk through. And
absolutely.
Did you find that to be the case?
Yeah, I think all moms don't know what they signed on for when they became mom, you know. But yes, there's a lot of roles you play. I outlined 13 different jobs, from media director to, of course, sex ed teacher to professor of gender studies, et cetera, et cetera. You end up fulfilling a lot of different positions.
Yeah. Now, Darlene, as you look, especially knowing that your daughters are now grown women, what would you say, or what aspects of parenting and relating to young adult women are moms probably today most unprepared for or most fearful of when they kind of reach that? Because there's lots of moms talk about, you know, babies, and you can go to the play groups for toddlers, and then you get into school and you kind of have your schedule and you know what's what. But once you hit the teen years and beyond, I think it kind of can be a free for all, and there can be a lot of fear in moms because they're looking at generational differences. They're looking at just lifestyle differences, how things are playing out. What would you say are some of those key areas that moms might be fearful for looking at young adult women?
I think one of the biggest things is my generation is definitely different than this one, and the young women are finding relationships or marriage or family later or not at all. Mm-hmm. And it's being okay with that. Mm-hmm. It's being whatever destiny, whatever purpose, whatever road our daughters find themselves in, being supportive of it, because it's not as easy. Mm-hmm. And it's not as predictable. And these young women have to go through the minefield of some bad relationships, pretty desperate relationships. But then again, they have careers, so we support that as well.
Yeah. I often tell the story here on Boundless of it. That's kind of where my mom and I land. My mom and I have a big generational difference because she's considerably, I was the youngest of six kids, so she's considerably older. Love you, Mom. But anyway.
Good move.
She's not a huge, speaking of which, the podcast, she's still trying to figure out what that is, actually. But you know, she went through that classic in the 50s, went to college, met my dad, went to some basketball games and got married. And her, you know, she says to me, Lisa, I don't even know what in the world your problem is. Like, why you can't meet anyone? What's your issue? Where are all these guys? What, you know, are you sure you're not just turning them down? Are you sure? And it was so quote unquote easy for her. And she doesn't understand kind of the quagmire that I'm in today's dating scene in 2012. So what would you say when you talk about some of those disconnects about what moms expect and what they think should be, what it was easy year, and now there are so many more choices for women. How have you seen that played out?
I think what's difficult for moms is, especially the older you get, you realize you're going to be gone one day. Mm-hmm. When this little baby is given to you and put in your arms, you want to protect her. And you think, who's going to protect her when I'm gone? Who's going to take care of this little girl? And in your mind, it is the spouse. It's the man that's going to enter her life and be her knight in shining armor, at least doll armor, some kind of armor, you know, and help her out. And that's not true. So you have to step back. A lot of mothers have to step back and say, what's plan B and how can I support it? Mm-hmm. And I think at the same time, daughters have to realize it's more from a care instinct than it is I don't like where you are. Mm-hmm. It's more concern. And try not to disconnect from your mother because you don't like where she's going on that subject.
Yeah. So how have you navigated that with your own daughters? Because one of them is now married and one is very much immersed in a career. So
it is funny because the one that's married now said she didn't want any part of marriage. She's like, it's messy. It's a minefield. I don't think I'm going there. I'm not dating for the next 3 years. And she didn't. She continued pursuing her career. And she got caught off guard and found a great guy and got married. The one who is single thinks, I don't want to be alone forever. I'm going to be 30 soon. I don't want to really live my life this way. So you go from, honey, there's a man out there, to, it's okay. You're doing great in your career. Go for it. You're in film. You're producing. You're doing all the things you wanted to do. Have at it. It's good. Oh, no, there's a man out there. So as a mom, it just depends on which phone call I have from the same girl.
Yeah. And how would you say, I mean, how can women and moms in particular better encourage their daughters in that path? Because I know, you know, and again, we talk about this a lot at Boundless, how there's almost shame in talking about marriage in the church today. Women who say, I really, you know, sure, I've got my career, I've got my PhD, I've got this, but I would really just love to be a wife and mother. And immediately what I've heard and what other women have heard is, oh, don't worry, when it's the right time, you know, the great guy will come along, or we get all the platitudes, you know, or just give it to the Lord, or just work on yourself. And when you're ready, then someone's going to come along. And it's very much almost like, you know, don't talk about that. Like, we're not trusting God, you know, in it. So what do you think the encouragement is in that? How can women better encourage younger women who are looking at that?
Yeah, I think that's really tough, too, because I have dear friends who are 45 years old who have always thought they'd find the perfect man, and a couple who have now adopted children. and said, I guess that wasn't the road for me. And they are in a wonderful place in life and difficult place. And so I think as my generation, we need to remove ourselves from the platitudes. We need to remove ourselves from, well, this is how it should be, and say, this is 2012. And if I sat back and look at some of the 20, 30-year-old men, I don't want any of them. You know, no offense, but there's a lot of them I think, no, I don't want my little girl with that boy, you know? And so I think we need to step back and say there are other roads and our daughters may find themselves there. And we want to encourage them that it's okay. And you will live an amazing life and God can use you in incredible ways in whichever road you find yourself on.
Yeah. And how, you know, and this might be backtracking a little bit and looking at your daughters as they were younger, and I know you definitely land on some of this in the book. What, we always hear, you know, that, oh, well, boy, thank goodness I didn't have boys because they're so difficult and they're just crazy and they're always getting into trouble and whatever. But I think as girls get older, some of that shifts and all of a sudden more concern comes for the daughters. And what is that, you know, navigating the teen years and then navigating a number of these different life stages. What would you say are some of the, you know, key things that you learned through the process of mothering, especially with your daughters, that even women now and these young adult women who are preparing to be mothers should know?
First, you need to realize you're a female too. You may be the adult, but you're the female too. So as your daughter gets to the place where they're navigating the female emotions, you have to learn to unengage yours. When the throwdown happens, you need to not throw down. You need to go to separate rooms. You need to realize I'm the grown-up. I need to be the one who doesn't pull the pin in this potential explosive situation and calms things down. Because I think it is a female-to-female thing. Very much so. And I think that continues into your adult daughter where you want to recognize them. They're grown up now. They have independence. They have a life. They have their own decisions. And all of a sudden, you're not supposed to be making them for them. You really are supposed to simply support them in it. And that's kind of hard because moms are caretakers. Moms are wanting to fix things and you can't fix everything.
Yeah. So what would be your communication advice, especially on the level of, you know, one of your daughters is doing something that you just know is going to lead her down a bad path and you're just, you know, wisdom, experience, wisdom in, you know, where you've come from and you're like, this is not good. How do you deal with that knowing that she's an adult and you're going to have to speak into it without making her decision for her?
You tell her you think this is not good. And then if she heads down the road, you say, I love you. And if this is where you're going, I'm standing by you. And if you happen to hit the bump that I think you may hit, I'm there for you. And you really have to do that as a mom. And it happens. It does happen. And you see your daughter going in a place that you're absolutely sure is going to end in not just difficulty, but pretty much explosive emotions. Don't leave her. Don't sit there the whole time saying, oh, I told you, you should have listened to me. It doesn't matter. I just want to be there for my daughter then. And I want her to know I will. And I'll support her no matter what her decision is.
Yeah. So on the flip side of that, what would you tell girls, young women who are listening, How can they best go to their moms then in light of that? Like, what's a great approach for approaching a mom for advice, for help, for prayer? What do moms really want to hear from their young adult daughters?
We want to think that we bring some kind of value, that our adult daughters recognize that we have lived a bit of life and we have had our own bumps and maybe they can learn from it. So I'd say, my daughters call. They ask a lot. I'm very fortunate, and we have great communication. What they do usually is just lay it out, honestly, in tears sometimes. And I think that if a daughter is more vulnerable, that helps a mother be more vulnerable. When the walls start going up, both walls start going up. If you think your mom's wearing you out about why can't you find a man, why can't you find this, try as a daughter to find another conversation to engage your mom in, something that you can connect that's less volatile. Then she'll feel trusted again. Then you can venture back into the more difficult one and it won't be as antagonistic.
Okay. What about the girls who are saying, well, yeah, Darlene, I wish, you know, you were my mom, because it sounds like you know what you're talking about.
But some days.
Either my mom is too controlling, or she's not even in my life at all, or I can't get her to understand me, or we just don't get along. We're way too different. We're not on the same page. What would be your advice to women there as far as establishing or reestablishing a relationship with their mom that is healthy and that can kind of breed some of this back and forth?
I think there are occasions where mothers and daughters are never going to be the mothers and daughters that they may have hoped they could have, or the daughter hope they had got from their mother, the mom they could confide in. Some mothers aren't capable of that. I think what you have to learn as the daughter is how to love your mother anyway, how to be to her what you wish she would be to you. How to be the daughter that loved her, that listened to her, that cared about her. And if you need a confidant, knowing that she may not be capable of it, find another confidant. But do not walk away from your relationship with your mother, because I think as a daughter, there's some responsibility there, that you need to be a good daughter, whether she's a good mother or not.
Mm-hmm. That's good. And then I think the other dynamic here, Darlene, which I want you to talk to a little bit, is then as we grow older, kind of how that relationship can shift and change. So, for example, you know, there are a lot of things now with my mom where I'm the one that's helping her. I'm the one that's coaching her along. I mean, whether that, and it can start at any age, whether that's with technology or whether it's, you know, mom, let me clue you in on where this is going right here, or let me help. How do we help navigate that relationship where there's a little bit of a role reversal in some senses without making our moms feel talked down to or make them feel like they no longer have any input in our lives, or we're just having to shepherd them through whatever? I mean, helping them maintain kind of that autonomy and that ability to still speak into our lives.
Yeah, I think that's difficult. I mean, I'm in somewhat of the same place myself with my mother, where she requires things from me that are different than being a daughter. And it's a balance between helping but not being condescending. Encouraging your mother to learn new things, or at least to bridge some areas she may not be capable of, but still treating her with respect in the areas she may know. It may be things that you don't even really relate to, whether it's, hey, she's a great baker, you know, she can bake the cookies out the wazoo, you know, and appreciate the things that she brought to life. You know, it may be generationally different, but make sure she knows that those are still valuable to you. And then when you have to deal with the difficult ones, it's a little bit easier because she feels like you value her somewhere.
Hmm. That's good. What would you say now, as you're able to look back, and obviously you're still in relationship with your daughters, but when you look at them, what surprises you about the way that they've turned out? What really are you amazed by? I mean, because I think, you know, there's something that's great about being a mom and doing the putting in the hard work. And I think a lot of moms just wonder, is my daughter even going to turn out okay? I mean, how in the world is this good? But I think it's like you can look and you can see she's a grown woman. Mm-hmm. She now has amazing skills and abilities, and she loves people. And what about your daughters? Do you just are amazed that God has done?
That they are so entirely different human beings, which I knew from the moment they were born, but they have grown up into wonderful, unique people, bringing different things to their world. I told my eldest daughter, who lives in LA, the other day, she was teaching me how to love the unlovely, because she's in a difficult world with difficult people. She's in the trenches of the film industry, working real hard among some pretty difficult, mean people, and she loves them well. And I said, you're doing such a great job. If I could learn to love as you do, I'd be a better person. And my youngest, her tenacity is incredible, absolutely incredible. And I think what's amazing as the mother of adult daughters is you go, look at how strong they are. Look at what their little personalities, you saw it too. Look at what it became and how it's masterful in their adult life.
That's cool. Well, like I said on the front end of the show, this week is Mother's Day, this Sunday. So make sure as you reflect, especially on this interview, that you are thinking of just those touch points, even between yourself and your mother, whether growing up or where you are now in your relationship. And I think what Darlene has said here has just been great to speak into that and give us all ideas of how we can better affirm our mothers, how we can better relate to them, communicate with them. And so make a point of doing that. Darlene Brock, again, she's the author of Help Wanted, Moms Raising Daughters. Pick it up, you know, for yourself, but also for your mom. I mean, I think it's a great opportunity for moms to look kind of, you know, through that lens at us and then vice versa and really find out how to better land on the same page and understand one another and love one another well. So, Darlene, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
If faith can move the mountains, let the mountains move. We come with expectation, waiting here for you. Waiting here for you. Waiting here for you.
Well, hello, everyone. I am opening up this week's inbox with another question from one of you. Thank you for submitting it. And a new voice in the crowd here. I have got Caitlin with me. Caitlin, welcome.
Thank you.
You are part of our Focus Leadership Institute, the staff here. And so you will definitely have good insight for weighing in on this one, I think. This will be very helpful to our listeners. So let me go ahead and read the question and I'll let you take a stab at it. Okay, this person says, I recently graduated from college and decided to move to California to where my parents live. I love it, but what do I do about how much I miss my friends and home in Oklahoma? How do I live across the country but still be invested in their lives?
First thing that comes to mind is just, you know, thanking the Lord for those friendships, because what a blessing they sound like they have been in your life. And the other things, three things really come to mind. First of all, how grateful we are for the time that we live in where we can easily keep in contact with people, you know, over the internet, Facebook, so many other social media. Skype is one of my favorite because I can still get that face-to-face feeling to it. So even texting and phone, even if you're not a phone person, snail mail, there's so many different ways of little things that you can do. The other piece to it, I think, is being very intentional. It's a different kind of intentionality than when you were with them, where it was easy to get together. You're going to have to go out of your way to pick up the phone and call, you know, send a text. But it's still important to have that intentionality. And the other thing is, be willing to share the big stuff. Ask about the big stuff. You know, get to the heart of it. That's what built your friendships to begin with. Don't, you know, think just because you're not with them in the room that you can't talk about that. Ask what you can pray about for that person. That's been a huge one that I've seen for people of just, you know, sending a quick text and saying, hey, what can I pray about for you today? And then actually praying about it, you're still sharing that daily walk and the stuff that's going on, the important things. And the other thing that comes to mind is a quote that a friend of mine gave me from Jim Elliot that says, wherever you are, be all there. And so, you know, the Lord has you in a time in the season back home. So, you know, pour into that, you know, find out what the Lord wants for you there while still being intentional with the friends back home.
Yeah, I think that's good and so helpful, because I think a lot of times we're so desperate to cling onto what was that we're unwilling to look at the new opportunities that we have. And I know in my life, as I have transitioned to different places across the country, it's been hard and you feel like you're losing those friends and you want to cling onto that so tightly. But the fact is that relationships have seasons and have ebbs and flows, and we have to recognize that, you know, you probably will be able to stay in touch with these folks on some level, but maybe it won't be the same as it was before. And now you have an opportunity to invest in new people. And maybe those old folks are going to come around again, you know, at some point again as well. And so I think we often think, you know, it's the time is here or now, and we're desperately trying to keep what we had and fearful of going ahead to what may be. And so I think those are good insights on that front. So very good thoughts. And hopefully this person will recognize, you know, again, that you know, this is a season and it's an opportunity to, like you said, really take advantage of technology, take advantage of just the little things that can be done and the big things that can be done. And hopefully she'll get some encouragement from that. So you were recently actually moved here as well. So you probably are in this season of
figuring out what it looks like to keep a hold of those relationships and dive into what the Lord has for me now.
Mm-hmm. Good. All right. Well, hopefully this listener will do that as well and will be able to benefit from this. Thank you so much, Kaylin, for weighing in on that. Okay, that is it, everyone, for this week's show. We want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can answer your question in the future. And hopefully you will do your best to maintain your friendships on whatever level that God has given them to you for this season. So do it and let us know how it goes. That is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.